The title of today's sermon is Spiritual Warfare, and I'd like to begin in Revelation chapter 12. Brethren, time is growing short. How much longer will you and I enjoy the freedom of religion to have Sabbath services and a website and all of our sermons and doctrine online? God's people are being bombarded all around the world. Satan is encroaching on our religious freedoms. Everywhere, they're cracking down on everything of a godly nature, not just in America. YouTube announced that it is now targeting videos that contain what they call controversial materials that expose subversive religious movements. For example, if we would say something that the Muslims have done to Christians somewhere, they're targeting that sort of thing. Or if we were to hold up what they would consider supremacist, like the people of God or Israel today, they wouldn't even know who Israel was. YouTube is targeting those videos. Let's go all the way around the world. China's Ministry of Public Security is tackling what they call the problem of websites that are disseminating harmful information. You can imagine what that would be. I want to show you that this mindset extends around the world. You cannot even read certain sections of the Bible in England, even in Sabbath services, without the threat of going to jail. Google employees have been instructed to demote anything non-politically correct from search results, like they exclude anything that is of an anti-Islamic terror nature, or anything that is critical of Islam. They demote that or remove it from their search results. A Facebook page was frozen for 2 weeks, and the owner was advised that they could face arrest for hate crimes if any further content of that nature was posted in the future. I hope that every one of you, brethren, has a good hard copy supply of sermons and doctrine, because the day is coming when we are going to be shut down. Jesus said the night comes when no man can work. He said that in John 9 and verse 4. Satan is encroaching on our religious freedoms, and that's where the impetus is coming from. Make no mistake about that. Satan wants the truth of God, the gospel of God, even the people of God destroyed. Children in parts of Canada can now make life-altering decisions before the age of consent, against their parents' better wisdom. Young people today do not stand a chance of having a right biblical understanding of God unless their parents are very, very diligent. In Canada, if you will not call a little boy Miss because he decided he wants to be a girl, you can be fined and imprisoned. In Canadian law, has an even wider reach. The Canadian law's chief advocate thinks that it is child abuse to deny a child's chosen gender identity. And it's not just Canada that's lost its collective mind on this issue. The same law already applies right here in Illinois, here in the United States. How far is our society away from concluding that all parents are unfit if they don't play along with their kids' misguided gender identification? It's like everyone has lost their good senses. You know how the states are cracking down on those who will not cater to the perverted population? You must bake cakes for their wedding and issue their marriage licenses, or it is you that'll be fined. It's you that'll go to jail. Brethren, Satan is behind all this. The nations of Israel, the English-speaking nations basically, are the only nations in the world that allow same-sex marriage. Now that's a strange thing. You'd think the pagans would be at the head of the line doing that sort of thing. As in the days of Noah, violence and crime are almost out of control. It's high time that the church of God, the brethren of the church of God, wake up. This is no time to be letting our guard down. We know very well that Satan is subtle. We have the biblical record to show us. Look at how he handled Adam and Eve. And that was after they had personally, face-to-face, been instructed by Jesus Christ. He comes along and he says, dismiss what Jesus said. And they did. Now is not the time to stop watching. We need to be watching what's going on in this world, how things are shaping up. Jesus said to watch so that we would know. Let's not stop watching as so many of our brethren have discontinued their watchful vigilance and they're going to get caught unawares. Satan is putting his hand into world events in a big way, even right now. Do not discount that. We read in Revelation 12 and verse 9, the great dragon, these are the words of God, speaking of Satan, the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan. So he's identified here. The dragon is Satan. You might have to start in Genesis, but when you get to Revelation, you know that the dragon is Satan. Who deceives the whole world? He has that capability. He's making use of it. He was cast out into the earth. Yes, that's where we are. And his angels, we call them the demons, were cast out with him. Now, as you read down through Revelation 12, you come to the end of Revelation 12 with Satan knowing that his time is short. Now, that's interesting. It's hard for us to discern at times, but I guarantee you, Satan knows that his time is short. He has very little time, and he's going to make as much use of that time as he possibly can. We come to Revelation 13. Notice, breaking into verse 2, the dragon, the Satan, gave him, speaking of the beast, his power and his seat and great authority. So these are some things that are going to be taking place momentarily, very soon, may even right now be shaping up. But there is going to be a man, head of the beast power, and Satan gives him his power, his seat, his office, and great authority. Now, brethren, you can keep your marker if you have one there in Revelation, because we will be coming back after a while. Let's go over to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. The beast power is on the horizon, maybe closer. Are we alert to how serious world conditions have become? It's not like back when we were in worldwide. So much has changed. Look at how much the world has changed just recently. Satan is being unleashed. Even now, we can see it if we take a look at everything that's going on in the world and shaping up exactly like the Bible said it would for the end time. God will soon remove all the restraints on Satan, which, for now, allowed you and I, brethren, to live normal lives and to preach the gospel to the world. 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 7. God tells us, the mystery of iniquity does already work. Only he who now lets will let until he be taken out of the way. What does that mean? He who lets will let. It means that very soon now, Satan and his beast partner in crime will be unleashed on the world and given a free rein to work his iniquity. He will be let loose. God is going to let him loose. He's going to remove those restraints. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 8. And then shall that wicked, now we're talking about the beast power, be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth. Well, we know this isn't Satan in verse 8 because God doesn't consume Satan when he gets here, but he does the beast power. And shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Verse 9, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan. So see, it's similar to Satan. He's going to be doing the things of Satan. He'll be as mean, evil, cruel, and hateful as Satan. With all power, this most powerful man ever. All power and signs and lying wonders. This beast is going to be cruel and vicious, especially to those who have acted properly. A number of God's people will be protected, but this beast power is going to be relentless on God's people who are caught in the tribulation. Verse 10, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. Brethren, have you noticed how down through history, nothing ever lasts long, nothing ever survives for very long, except for God's spiritual plan, which stays on track. It's always there. Nothing else is permanent except the spiritual things of God and God's Spirit. 2 Peter chapter 3, if you'll turn over with me. It's the Apostle Peter who describes this world in which we live And I'll use a common modern day phrase. It's like a house of cards. It's very fragile. It barely stands. The slightest little breeze or the slightest bump can knock the house of cards down. It's almost like it's so fragile. It won't last. It's ready to topple. Let's understand, as we look around the world, I'll give you a few more examples. Big, really big powers are at work, and they're starting to stack up against the people of God, against the church of God. When I'm talking about big powers, I'm talking about Russia, China, the Asian trading bloc, all of Europe. There is an unseen war, unseen as of yet, going on. And it's behind closed doors quite often. And you're not going to see it on the daily news in this country. You can dig for it, but you're not going to see it if you watch any of the popular news stations. Moscow and Shanghai are busily working at creating a new world order out of big banks and big government, and by focusing heavily on economic, political, and military issues in their regions and beyond as far as they can reach. And brethren, even if you just read the papers a little bit, you know that Russia has gold, Russia has oil, and Russia is aggressive. China is huge, has a considerable military, and an assertive space program that is not for peaceful purposes. You know, we parked our shuttle a good while back. China hasn't parked theirs. They're putting up shuttles all the time, probably have some up there right now. We don't hear too much about that. We don't hear very much about their Star Wars program. But they have one that's gone well beyond what Ronald Reagan instituted. They have their own GPS, their global positioning system, that will kick in when ours is rendered inoperative. Can you imagine? Everybody uses them even in their cars. You can't fly from one city to another in an airplane without the GPS. That's going to be knocked out. And it doesn't take much to knock it out. And China has the capability to knock it out. Theirs will work, but none of ours will work. You talk about being tied up to where you can't do anything. These and many more facts provide a compelling indication of the direction the world is headed. Sure, the United States is trying its best to maintain its own sphere of influence, to counter all of Russia and all of Asia. We're trying to contain those Eastern powers. How do we do it? With our own organizations. China has its organizations, lots of economic, military, different kinds of operations. So does Russia. We have NATO that we use to try to contain the Eastern powers. We have the European Union, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the World Trade Organization. We even have Washington, D.C. That's our ace in the hole. But, brethren, understand this. Because of our sins, personal sins, national sins, all that we have to counter the Eastern powers will be too little and too late. That's what the Bible tells us. We are losing, as a nation, the spiritual battle against Satan. We cannot, however, as God's people, lose the battle against Satan. We're talking about spiritual warfare, brethren, and it's real. And it's ongoing, and we cannot be blind to it. It's all going to come crashing down on our heads before you know it. You look around at America, and you'd want to wag your tongue if there was no more Disney World or Disneyland or Arch at St. Louis. What is going to happen to this nation that God has blessed so richly? Some people go, oh, you're just spouting too much because look at the stock market. It's better than ever. It's higher than ever. It's growing. People are making tons and tons of money. Brethren, let's be realistic. Looking at the stock market as an indication of where we are is like looking at the speedometer and saying, look, we're going faster and faster and faster. Like, we're making really, really good progress. And all of that while not realizing that the bridge is out ahead. Our economy is really sick. And it's getting worse. There's not an indication that the economy is going to heal. If you talk to anybody in Washington, you'd find out that for a while, our government is going to try to maintain its size and control with ever-increasing taxes and ever-increasing spending. But those measures will only speed up the downward spiral that this nation is actually in. It's going to make the final crash all the more catastrophic. That's where we're headed. Let's go over to 2 Peter 3. We don't need to read it in the papers. We can read it in the Bible. And Peter seemed to have a wonderful grasp, and he wrote all of these things. It's like he knew everything today would be a house of cards, and they were going to tumble down one by one. In God's church, thankfully, we know that the only light at the end of the tunnel is going to be the return of Jesus Christ. It is Jesus who prophesied just how bad things would become before his return. Let's pick it up right here in 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 and 4. In the last days, that's right now, brethren, in the last days scoffers will be walking after their own lust, saying, and I'll just insert this, brethren, this is what many in the church of God are saying, or at least thinking. Where is the promise of his coming? Where's the promise of Christ coming? Christ said he was coming back. There's going to be a second advent. He's going to come back. Where is it? I don't see it happening. I've been hearing for 50 years. Jesus is coming back. Continuing, for since the fathers fell asleep, this is speaking about the prophets of old, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. Friend, that's not true. All things are not as they were since the beginning of creation. Scoffers say that it's the same, but it's not. Let's be wise and understand that all things definitely are not continuing as they have from the beginning of creation. But they're about to reach a resounding crescendo that will soon usher in the return of Jesus Christ. Things are not the same. America and all of Israel have rejected God. That's gone on for a long time, but there have been those who didn't reject God. We're not going to turn there, brethren, but Isaiah chapter 10 shows that God will use a modern Assyrian king. Probably won't be crowned a king like we see in the movies. Maybe he'll be a German leader. Maybe he will be a king. I don't know. Or an emperor. But he's going to be the head. He's going to be the tool of God. He's God's indignation on the USA and the Israelitish nations. You can put down Isaiah 10 in verse 5 and read about that. God says that he will use a German leader, an Assyrian leader, as the head of something that is going to be the tool of his indignation. Daniel chapter 11. We know that man is the beast power. The modern beast power will also have to contend with his own situation, because Satan's world is going to be terribly violent and fighting against itself. It's described this way by Daniel. And I want you to watch for the word push, P-U-S-H. Push is the operative word here in Daniel. Daniel 11 and verse 40. At the time of the end, again, that's of this age, today, shall the king of the south, now I'll propose that that's possibly a radical Islamic jihadist movement, the king of the south, it'll come from those nations down there, shall the king of the south push at him, okay, who's him? That's the final end time beast, the ruler of Europe, the one who gives his power to the 10 kings, or the 10 sovereigns, the 10 leaders. And the king of the north, think in Europe, brethren, shall come against him, the king of the south, like a whirlwind with chariots and with horsemen and with mighty ships. Hey, we haven't seen anything that big, I suppose, since World War II. Yeah, there have been smaller wars, but this is really big when you talk about chariots like a whirlwind. That's the best army tanks, and who knows what they have hidden in the warehouses right now, with many men and ships. And he, the king of the north, shall enter into the countries, that's the Islamic countries, and shall overflow and pass over. You can put in your notes also Revelation 17, verses 12 through 17, and study the details of this. But again, what kind of push is the world of radical Islam already bringing to bear on Europe specifically, and on how much of the rest of the world as well? The answer, in short, is this. The push is their migrating multitudes, their Sharia law, their religion, their culture, their great numbers, which in the long run has no use for others not in their religion. If you're not a part of Islam, they will have no use for you. Oh yes, they'll be nice for a little while. It's in their religion. Be nice to them, lie to them, make them think everything's okay. But that's not where their heart is. We have been witnessing for almost 10 years now, brethren. You go back and check the newspapers. We've been witnessing immigration and culture shock of epic proportions descending uncontrollably on the lands formerly occupied by the Holy Roman Empire. The Muslim demographic encroachment is a push, a population pressure on Europe. Do we realize what's building up there and how much pressure there is, brethren? It's not just, oh, there's not room. You might be thinking, oh, they can build more condos and more places for them. It's more of a push than that. Historically, it's a well-known fact that the Germanic race considers themselves to be a notch above the rest of men. Go back and read the history of World War II. And they have, the Germans have this ingrained desire to spread out. They even have a word for it, Lebensraum. It means they need living space. They need a whole lot of living space. That's why Hitler went into Poland and World War II started. They need living space from other nations. That is the way the Germanic people are. God says in the scriptures, they don't mean to be that way. They don't mean to be so aggressive. They don't mean to be so warlike. They don't mean to go take your land, but they are, God says. So if you have that mentality, the German people want to spread out. And just the opposite of that is happening. They are being encroached upon. This ongoing conflict between Muslim incursion and insurgency and German ingrained territorial aggression are like two colliding tectonic plates. Something has got to give in the clash of two titans, and the result's going to be Islam vanquished in Europe and Jerusalem surrounded by those in control of Europe. Every house of cards eventually collapses. If it's not in accordance with the way of God, it is going to topple over. It is sin that causes every house of cards to collapse. And you look back through history. Let's just briefly look through history, and we'll look at how Peter talks about all these houses of cards falling. Where I hope you're in 2 Peter, or if you're not, turn over to 2 Peter chapter 2. First, it was Satan's rebellion against God. That didn't stand. It collapsed. Satan was cast to the earth. We read in 2 Peter 2 and verse 4, "For if God spared not the angels," this is our first example, "if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into the chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment." So we see God didn't cut them any slack. When Satan sinned, that house of cards toppled. Adam and Eve, they built a house of cards in Eden, the Garden of Eden, and that toppled. Then Cain built a godless society that grew and grew and grew until God sent the flood. That house of cards toppled. Peter continues with his narrative, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 5, "And spared not the old world," see, their house of cards crumbled, "but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly." The millions, perhaps billions of men and women of Noah's day had their house of cards come falling down. They all drowned. And then Peter gives us another biblical example of those who had their house of cards fall because of iniquity, because of sin. 2 Peter 2 and verse 6, "And turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that afterwards should live ungodly." Brethren, I'm pointing these out. This is old history. You know it. But the question we should be asking in our mind, if they were not spared, how is America going to be spared? Keep thinking that. Sodom and Gomorrah's house of cards disintegrated. It was quite a spectacle. When we come out and separate ourselves from iniquity, we will be saved. We saw with Noah, and now with Lot, Abraham's nephew, 2 Peter 2 and verse 7, "And delivered just Lot." And Peter is going through these house of cards, vexed with filthy conversation of the wicked. Verse 8, "For that righteous man dwelling among them and seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds." Okay, brethren, we come in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9, here's our hope. Brethren, we're fighting spiritual warfare. It's going to be hopeless for all those in the past, all those in America, but we, the people of God, have hope. The Lord knows, verse 9, how to deliver the godly out of temptations. That means trials, terrible disaster, and to reserve the unjust under the day of judgment to be punished. Yes, their house of cards is yet going to fall. All of the mighty empires that have ever existed on the earth have fallen. Just think of house of cards that go back. Babel, that tower, it was like a big house of cards. It's gone. We know that Assyria, that great empire, is gone. Don't you think there were smart people in Assyria that says, hey, if we do this with walls and men and chariots, we can keep it together? They thought they couldn't be defeated. Assyria is gone. Babylon's gone. Persia is gone. Greece, the brilliant people of Greece, are gone. Their empire has collapsed. It faded away after conquering the world. And Rome, you've seen lots of movies. Look how powerful Rome was. They were in England. They were in Asia. They were in Russia. They were in the South. They were everywhere. Powerful, powerful Rome. They've all fallen. It can and it does happen to great and powerful nations. And it's going to happen to America. Look at your street. Look at your city. Think about what it's going to be like when there are no more streetlights and there's no more water and there's no more store and there are no more trucks and there's only the enemy. Look across the sea, brethren. The sun has already set on the British Empire. They rule the world. They rule the waves. Do we today arrogantly believe that our fate will be any different than all the rest that has gone before us? Yes, America still has the largest economy in the world. That's not a proof of anything. You don't think that some of those nations were mighty and rich when they collapsed? Here's the truth, brethren. America is a physically and spiritually sick nation. Let's go over to Revelation 13. Here in this country, we are in serious financial trouble with a debt that is not only unwieldy, hard to handle, but it's never going to be resolved because we have a government that's unwilling and inept in passing any legislation that will render us a solvent nation someday. We're not going that way. How many times have you heard a politician say, I'm going to balance the budget? They never do. And we get used to be, most of my life, millions and then billions of dollars in debt each year. Now it's trillions more in debt. It is unsustainable. And somebody is going to pay the piper. That's the way it works. Somebody is going to come to us in America and say, get out of my land. I own this place. And they won't do it that nice. That is serious business. Because that is when nations are in trouble. It's not just America that's in serious trouble. Nearly every major world economy is in trouble. They're all in the same boat. And that's so serious because when that happens, sabers go to rattling and hostilities break out. Go back and look at World War II if you want to just go back to recent history. They were hemmed in. They had no steel. They had no oil. They broke out in war. They always have a reason. It's not a valid reason. Germany didn't have a valid reason, but war breaks out. And right now, today, brethren, in the United States, in England, in Russia, in Iran, you just name every country, especially places like China, there are military hawks, H-A-W-K-S, hawks on all sides who are saying that there's nothing like a good war, like a timely war, to get an economy moving. You saw what happened in America in World War II. Man, everything was booming. Everybody was at work. We need men to work. Where are we right now, brethren? The beast of prophecy might be starting to be formed even as we look on. Satan is aligning great powers against one another in more ways than we can see. They're not doing everything in open. We don't know what kind of weapons we have. We don't know what kind of weapons they have. But I bet you a dollar to a dime that China's got some secret weapons that would keep you awake at night if you knew about it. Satan is behind it all. Satan has always wanted to be worshipped since the day he went up to the throne of God and tried to bump God off of his throne. Satan works hand in hand with the beast power to obtain that worship. Revelation 13 and verse 4. And all the world admired and worshipped the dragon. That's Satan. And you picture that. All the world admired him and worshipped him and thought, isn't that great? We in God's church can hardly conceive of Satan being admired or being worshipped. Continuing in verse 4, which gave power to the beast. Satan's one that gives his power to the beast. And they worshipped the beast as well, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who's able to make war with him? Wow, you talk about some military reserves. Bombs, missiles, ICBMs, lasers, space weaponry, who knows what? Who's able to make war with him? The intent of verse 4 is that there's nobody who can even come close to making war with the beast power. That's how powerful he's going to be. Drop down to verse 7. And it was given unto the beast to make war with the saints. Uh-oh. Brethren, can you imagine if the United States government didn't want you to have Sabbath services? SWAT team would have been at your house early this morning. There wouldn't be any services. It was given to the beast to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. It didn't just stop at your state or your nation. The whole world. He is going to be a worldwide power. Verse 8. All that dwell upon the earth shall worship him. The islands of the Philippines, the Adirondacks, the people in the Arctic and the Antarctic. All the earth shall worship the beast whose names are not written in the book of life. Oh, there's an exception for us. We're not going to worship the beast. Right, brethren? Whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. We've got to make sure that our name is in that book. Brethren, are we listening? God says, Revelation 13 and verse 9, if any man have an ear, let him hear. Are you able to hear what is coming? It's really going to happen. It's going to be really, really bad. Pray that you'll escape all of these things. Pray to God that his will is done, and then you'll escape all of these things. Jacob's trouble is almost here. That's what we're talking about. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. The immediate future is fearfully bleak for all of our Israelitish nations. But understand this. When America crumbles, nature abhors a vacuum. And there are many nations ready to assume America's dominant role when our house of cards comes tumbling down. The United States dollar is still the world's number one currency. But China and Russia and others would like to see that dollar supremacy come to an end. We read in 1 Thessalonians 5, beginning in verse 2. We'll read 2 and 3. You yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them, as travails upon a woman with a child, and they shall not escape. Yes, that baby is coming. Let's go over to Peter again, brethren. 1 Peter chapter 5. We see, if we open our eyes, we can begin to see the terrible havoc that's being brought, about to be brought on the entire world by Satan. But let's realize that more than this, Satan desires the destruction and the devastation of God's people. So how do we survive so great a spiritual warfare? God explains to us how we are to wage spiritual warfare. That's the title of today's sermon. God explains to us how we are to wage spiritual warfare in a world devoid of God. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil, we're speaking about Satan, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. And brethren, he's doing that right now. Right now, he is trying to devour us. Brethren, can you read the handwriting on the wall? Look around at all of our neighbors. The people of America worship idols. They're symbolized in Hollywood. They're on TV. They're at private and public parties. They're everywhere in politics. These idols are like steeples on churches and stained glasses and organ music. But it's not just in that religious world. It's in the movies. It's in all the demonically inspired children's video games. And when the gay lesbian movement is marching down the street with their banners, there's all these idolatrous symbols. They all have their symbols to signify their particular brand of paganism. Today they have colored ribbons. You can see one ribbon for one thing and another ribbon for another thing, and all you have to do is look at the color of the ribbon and you know what their flavor of the day is. They have plaques. They have insignias. Anything except the scriptures. Now, brethren, let me make a point here. Being against these things is not enough. Being against all of these idols doesn't give us righteousness. Being near God is the answer. So it's not just enough to be against all of these things that we see all around us, whether it's in the news, the radio, the TV, the sports, whatever. That's all polluted. Being against it is not enough. We must draw near to God. Romans chapter 1. Have you noticed that there's a concerted effort to relegate the spirit world to every conceivable witch, phantom, gargoyle, sorceress, evil spirit? Sometimes I go down through the television stations looking for something decent to look for, and all you see is supernatural aliens, bizarre life forms, ghost-like shows, Walking Dead, vampires, zombies. It's incredible what this world is looking at. Don't you know that that is shaping the mind of a nation to be accepting of Satan and the beast power when they come on the scene? I don't know how they're going to incorporate all of those things, but you can be sure that their horror is going to be just like that. It's a nasty world, and it's only getting worse. Brethren, do you know where that fascination with all of this sick paraphernalia comes from? I hope you do. It comes from Satan. There is a universal fixation associated with the dark, demonic underworld. Even Jodokach Jr. attempted to change the very nature of the incorruptible God into creepy things, as Paul put it. I've mentioned this before, Romans 1 and verse 23. And change the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like unto corruptible man, the birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. That's sick, brethren, to put God in that category. But that's what they did back as worldwide was coming apart at the seams. Worldwide, that house of cards crumbled. They all crumble when they're godless, when they're sinful. We fought a long battle with Satan, but too many are letting down and gradually reabsorbing the attitudes and the culture of the surrounding world. You look out at some of the Church of God groups and anything goes. They're getting so close to the world. They're accepting the things of the world. You couldn't tell marriage in the Hollywood from marriage in the church in some of these groups. The people in this world live only for themselves. We read in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil," is pointed out, this is Satan, "as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour." That's who Satan wants to destroy. He wants to destroy the people of God. Verse 9, we're told by God, brethren, we're talking about spiritual warfare. We're to be sober and we're to be vigilant. Now, we're told to resist Satan, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. It's bad, brethren. There are terrible afflictions that are going on. But we're told to be vigilant. We're told by God to be fully awake. Set ourselves in a state of watchfulness and readiness. That's what I'm trying to do in today's sermon, brethren. Wake us up. It's about our ears. It's no time to joke about it. Satan is coming to power. He's called the adversary. He's against God. He's against God's people, seeking to destroy us. Thirdly, we're told, resist him. We have to stand strong against Satan. So how do we go about this spiritual warfare? Let's go to James chapter 4. Here's the answer to our being successful in our spiritual warfare against Satan. We want to succeed. We want to live. We want to be in the kingdom of God. We don't want to be destroyed when this last house of cards falls on this nation. James 4 and verse 7. This is the answer, brethren, to the spiritual warfare. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Doesn't say be against all of those things. Yes, we're against them. We have no part of them. We don't touch them. We don't support them. But submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil. He'll flee from you. Now that is a beautiful saying. You resist him, and he doesn't just turn his back and walk away. He flees from you because of the power of God, God's love, God's spirit, God's might and his power. Satan has been whooped before. Jesus said, I saw Satan fall from heaven, and he was knocked down to this earth. He's been beaten before, but God's left him there. We build moral character and moral strength by warring against Satan, by standing against Satan. God has left him there in God's wisdom. But notice verse 8, brethren. Here's the answer about how we are successful in our spiritual battle, in our spiritual warfare. James 4 and verse 8. Draw near to God. Now we can have a whole sermon on how to draw near to God, but we'll touch on a little bit of it. Draw near to God and he will draw near to you. And here's some of the things you do. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. That means start obeying God, doing the things of God, doing the things Jesus Christ said to do. Purify your hearts. No double standard. Not being cynical. Not being wise like the world. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. So don't be thinking both ways. Not one foot in the world, one foot in it with God's people. We have the God-backed promise that Satan will flee from us. So we're told, resist Satan. But that's directly linked to being obedient and submissive to God. If we submit to God, Satan is going to flee from us. Now, brethren, here's the hard part. The hard part is for us to see how a Christian should battle Satan and walk with Christ at the same time. We do. We walk with Christ, but we battle Satan. All at the same time. It's not enough to be against all the paganism and the wrongdoings in the world. Sure, we can point fingers all day long. Look how weak they are. Look at how close they are getting to paganism. Look at where they meet, what they do, who they marry, all of those kind of things. It's not enough just to point fingers in that direction. We must put on the righteousness of Jesus Christ. And those are not semantics, brethren. We live in a pagan-oriented world, full of false beliefs. Yes, full of symbols and full of their religions all around us, getting all the accolades and all the glory. And you know what Paul says? Put this in your notes. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10. Paul says we'd have to leave the planet to avoid them all. They're there. They're going to be there. They're going to remain there until their house of cards crumbles on top of them. But understand this, brethren, the pagans have been here since before the flood. Like the pagans, we eat food, we dress ourselves, we have a roof over our heads, we use the highways, just as pagans use the highways. But that doesn't make us a party to their sins, just because we know they're there and we see them and they're all around us. When God says, leave them alone, that means don't join them, don't boost them on. Don't encourage them. Don't have anything to do with them. We're told, touch not the unclean thing. And that's in order to set ourselves apart from the pagans. They're unclean and everything they do is unclean. We don't touch that. Here's a question that we must answer for ourselves. When are we in danger of crossing the line and taking away from God the things that are God's? You remember Jesus said in Matthew 22 and verse 21, give Caesar the things of Caesar and give God the things of God. To give Caesar his due was not wrong. God says, pay it. And he worked a miracle to do it. You pay the pagan world what they demand. But you give God the things that are God. It's not wrong in itself to go where the pagans have trod. Paul himself taught at Mars Hill. It was a hotbed for paganism. But Paul was there for God's greater honor and glory. Read about that in Acts 17 and verse 22. Paul was not being a part of that paganism. He was fighting it. He was submitting to God. Let's go over to Philippians chapter 2. When my dad died so many years ago now, brethren, I went into a Catholic church for the first time in about 40 years, I suppose. But I did not bow my knee to Baal, nor in my mind or heart for that matter. I didn't bow to Baal. You can put in your notes Romans 11 and verse 4 and Romans 14 verse 11. Don't get those mixed up. 11:4 and 14:11. It's about a bowing the knees to Baal. Brethren, our priority must always be to give God the glory, to put God first, to draw near to God, to seek God. Philippians 2 and verse 10. That at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow of things in heaven, things in the earth, and things under the earth. I don't quite understand that scripture about things under the earth. I don't know what's down there that Paul was thinking about when he wrote this. If you know it, you can tell it to me. But every knee should bow to Christ. That's the way it has to be. And brethren, as we look around at this nation devoid of the things of God, let's realize that there are some grassroots moral people in the United States of America and in England and in Canada and the English-speaking nations around the world. There will always be some, a few, from which God will draw a clean, a remnant to populate the millennial world tomorrow. There will always be a few. But with that in mind, moral relativism has taken over our Western culture, over our Western world. No longer do the ethical intentions of the inhabitants of this nation's thinking reflect a Judeo-Christian morality of objective and universal moral truth. That's gone. Will I find truth anywhere? Instead, you look at the people of this nation, the great majority follow that which is politically correct, and that's all against God. They follow things that are politically correct relative to social trends, whether it's deviant culture movements or their godless personal inclinations. It's a godless world. I don't know what people do that have young children and have to send them off to school where those children will now be taught at a very early age, you know, choose your gender and forget your God. It's a sick, sick world. The whole world system is anti-God. Romans chapter 12. We can make the mistake of overlooking the world's subtle influences as if they were of no consequence. They are, brethren. We can't straddle the fence between God and the world. Paul notes in Romans 12 in verse 2, do not be conformed to this world. Yes, they're there, but don't be like them. The Greek, if we translate Romans 12 and verse 2 properly, the Greek more correctly reads, stop allowing yourself to be fashioned to the patterns of this age. Or as J.B. Phillips' translation has it, don't let the world around you squeeze you into its mold. Don't be changed. Do not conform to this world. Says it pretty good in the King James. The God of this world is its driving force. Satan is the driving force in America today. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. Not only America. Friendship with the world corrupts us. Evil company corrupts good habits. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. The Bible makes it clear that God has willed that this spiritual warfare is an absolute necessity for the development and the preparation of His children to live in His kingdom. If we didn't have this spiritual warfare to push against and to war against, we wouldn't be prepared as we should be to be the children ready for the kingdom of God. Brethren, as you go out, there are many, many substitute enemies. You can put out there the Masons. We all know they have their secret handshake and all of their symbols. We don't have to spend inordinate time saying the Masons don't have it right. We know that. That doesn't make us godly. That's not drawing near to God to look into those secret societies or there's Eastern religions. Look, we know that Islam's spirit is a spirit of darkness. We don't have to look into black magic. We don't dabble with Ouija boards or these demon motifs that they have. 2 Peter 2 and verse 19. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are the servants of corruption. For of whom a man is overcome, of the same he is brought into bondage. We don't touch those things. We don't go there. We don't do that. We have enough to do in drawing near to God, in serving and loving our brethren. Romans chapter 6. Paul spells it out there about our daily Christian battle and how we fight the spiritual warfare. Romans 6 and verse 16. Know you not that to whom you yield yourselves servants to obey, now that should be God, his servants you are whom you obey, whether of sin unto death or obedience unto righteousness. Brethren, choose obedience unto righteousness, not sin unto death. We don't have to touch the unclean thing. Verse 17, but God be thanked that you were the servants of sin in the past, but now you have obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered to you. You heard the truth. You are doing things God's way. You're drawing near to God. Romans 6 and verse 18. Being then made free from sin, you became the servants of righteousness. That's how we draw near to God. Verse 19, Paul says, look, I'm speaking after the manner of men because of the infirmity of your flesh. For as you have yielded your members in the past, he's talking about servants to uncleanliness, unto iniquity, even so now, okay, Jesus Christ has wiped the slate clean. Now, verse 19 at the end, yield your members, servants, to righteousness, unto holiness. So what should a Christian do? The answer, in short, simple, is be right with God. Brethren, there are a lot of examples in the scriptures we can't start to go through. Go back and read about Job, the ancient patriarch Job. He talked about this hedge that God has placed around us. We need to remember God has put a wall of protection around us. So Satan and his demons can only go so far in their attempts to corrupt us and destroy us. Satan and his demons cannot destroy our loyalty to God and his truth. Read Job chapter 1, verses 6 to 10. Jesus has already defeated Satan. He's the one that's overseeing our well-being. And God's protection is not something that we brag about. It's not something that we flaunt. It's not something that we take for granted. But God's power is something that we can rely on. Go back and read about Jesus and his spiritual warfare, his battle with Satan. You can read about that in Matthew chapter 4 and verse 4. Jesus was in mortal combat with Satan. You can read Luke 4 and verse 4, another rendition. And you see that fasting was necessary. Jesus fasted for 40 days. We don't do that, but fasting is important. Sometimes there's an addiction. And we don't have to go into what the addiction is. There are many addictions that just drive a person's mind. Fasting breaks addiction. Jesus said this kind of demon goes out only by fasting and by prayer. We keep the commandments to draw near to God. Put this one in your notes, brethren. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 3. Though we walk in the flesh, you and I walk in the flesh, brethren, we do not war after the flesh. Verse 4. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God. They're spiritual, to the pulling down of a mighty fortress, strongholds. So this is very much like we saw in Ephesians 6 a while ago about put on the whole armor of God. We're told here in 2 Corinthians 10 how to fight the spiritual battle against Satan. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 5. Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. Get rid of those things. Put them out of your home. Put them out of your house. But especially put them out of your mind. And bringing into captivity every thought. That's where this battle is waged, in our mind. Bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. That's when we become pure in heart, able to see God, having drawn near to God. But because we are in the flesh, the mighty fortress that Paul's talking about right here is not a fortified fortress on a hilltop that has to be conquered with bombs or artillery or something like that. But the mighty forces we battle against are in our heart. They're in our mind, brethren. That's where they need to be eradicated. Jesus Christ said that as we draw near the very end time, religious persecution, family betrayal, all of these terrible things. I have brought so much bad news today, brethren, but the good news is here about drawing near to God. Persecution, family betrayal, spiritual deception, tribulation, all of those things, falling away from the love of God. That's the norm in this world, but not for us. Falling away from God is not the exception. That's what's going on in the entire world. Years ago when we were first called, we didn't expect that we would be here in the year 2017 before Christ came back. It's gone on way longer than we expected. We've seen the church of God dwindle to a small flock, just like it did in the first century. There must be a reason, brethren, that that's happening. It didn't seem to be so difficult to live our faith when we were first called. We first believed, oh yeah, we had some trouble with our job and with our relatives and some things like that. Most of us had to deal with work issues and relatives and friends who thought we were foolish for joining an organization that met on Saturday. And we didn't keep their holidays either. But after that, we were surrounded by like-minded brethren, and we could see the tangible results of the gospel. We didn't know back then, but God knew that there were many among us who had not submitted to Him, who had not obeyed Him, who had not put His way first. There were many of our buddies and friends who attended with us, but they were just coasting along. They were never really with the program. Jesus told His disciples that there would be an end time sorting out. You can read about it in Matthew 13 and verse 30. Let them grow together, the wheat and the tares, and they'll be sorted out in time. That time of testing, brethren, is now. Jesus Christ needs to test each of us individually to see where we stand. We still have more spiritual battles to fight. Our spiritual warfare is not over. Jesus will know when it's over. He'll know when it's done. You go back and read about the martyrdom of the saints. Many early Christians died for their faith. Are you, brethren, willing in these last days to face poverty, persecution, prison, even martyrdom for the sake of His word? Put down John 16, verses 2 and 3. Are we willing to suffer affliction? Or do we always have to have it soft and easy and good and lots of friends and everything just going along hunky-dory? Paul spoke of those faithful Christians who were choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, as Hebrews 11 and verse 25. Have we come to the point where we can glory in tribulation, knowing that tribulation works patience? That's Romans 5 and verse 3. Brethren, let's admit that our pains and sufferings of today pale into insignificance when we compare them to the afflictions that the early Christians endured. We've not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin as they did. Hebrews 12 and verse 4. So this time that we're in today, we can see that the world's about to crumble. But what about us in God's church? God needs to have hard evidence from each of us as to our faithfulness or lack thereof. God forbid. We're either faithful to Him, obedient to Him, or faithful to this present evil world. But during this difficult time today, brethren, each of us is writing our own record that God will use when the tribulation begins. We all hope to be accounted worthy to escape the tribulation, but the scriptures show that many of the brethren will not be practicing their Christianity as Christ requires. Again, Revelation 12 and verse 17. The dragon, that's Satan, he was angry with the woman. He was angry with the church of God. He went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God, have the testimony of Jesus Christ. But you notice what's missing? They weren't loving one another. They didn't lay their lives down for one another. That's why they end up in the tribulation. That's why they die in the tribulation. That's why they have to wash their robes in blood. Because they wouldn't lay their lives down now. They will lay their lives down physically in the tribulation. Right now, you only have to lay your life down spiritually. Come to the aid of the brethren and of the truth. God's not going to make an arbitrary decision to send anybody into the tribulation. That is going to be the test and the trial that people bring upon themselves. Brethren, don't assume that the trials and tests are behind us. In many ways, our situation today is quite similar to the latter days of the first century Ephesian era. Many of those members left their first love and fell away thinking that Christ delayed his coming. Jesus hasn't delayed his coming. For them, this excitement of their calling had worn off. They let down. They accepted watered-down doctrine. They sought high positions in the church. They mistreated their fellow servant. It's all recorded in the scriptures. The group of brethren they had been called into declined into almost nothing after it had been a functioning body that performed many baptisms, met in large groups, had big feasts, saw great miracles. And unfortunately, certain members went off into strange doctrines that were gaining in popularity. The majority wanted to be where the action was, and so they gravitated away from the practice of true Christianity. God had told the church, brethren, to watch and to hold fast. Brethren, let's understand that our warfare is spiritual in nature. The victory comes from God alone. So as time grows short, brethren, let's do everything that we can to be obedient to God, to love one another, and to draw near to God. Then, brethren, we'll glory with Christ and glory with God the Father when we see Jesus Christ reigning and ruling on earth, and we, among the saints, having won the battle, the spiritual warfare battle against Satan and his demons.